Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup, filling in today for Neil Strausser. Five Soviet dissidents released from Soviet jails are in New York this morning, and two Soviet spies are back home as a result of an exchange agreement worked out between Washington and Moscow, the first such swap on record involving only Soviet citizens. Robert Pierpoint reports an air of gratification at the White House.
The Carter administration is very pleased with itself over the exchange. One of the officials who negotiated the deal told reporters that it improves the overall atmosphere between the United States and the Soviet Union and could contribute to resolving other outstanding issues, including the pending agreement over the limitation on strategic arms. The exchange could also help persuade some members of the U.S. Senate to support that SALT agreement when and if it is achieved. The negotiations for the release of the five Soviet dissidents for the two Soviet spies have been underway since last fall. They took place at a very high level, including Soviet Ambassador Anatoly Dobrynin and his deputy, as well as Secretary of State Vance and National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski. Final approval was given by President Carter and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev. U.S. officials also hinted strongly that negotiations are still underway to free another well-known Soviet political prisoner, Anatoly Sharansky, whose wife now lives in Israel, but who has campaigned widely in this country for her husband's release. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, Washington.
The two Soviet spies, former U.N. employees Valdik Enger and Rudolf Chernayev, arrived back in Moscow this morning. They flew home in the same Soviet airliner that brought the five dissidents to New York. A small group of people gave them a warm welcome at the Moscow airport. Neither made any comment, and there's been no comment either by the Soviet government. The exchange has not been mentioned by the Soviet news agency TASS or on government radio and television. An oil spill is spreading off the coast of France, the result of a collision between a tanker of Liberian registry and a Norwegian tanker. Joan Shore reports from Paris.
The collision occurred just before dawn. The Liberian ship, carrying a cargo of 32,000 tons of heavy crude oil, sank after 5 hours. The crew of 32 was rescued. Spokesmen have not indicated whether the sunken ship is actually leaking oil, but they say there's no immediate danger of coastal pollution. They say the oil is heavy and likely to sink, unless winds and tides stir it up. The Norwegian tanker, which is not carrying any oil, is still afloat, but badly damaged. Rescue ships are going to its aid, but face a difficult task because of dense fog and high winds. Brittany, jutting right out into a major shipping route, has been the victim of many maritime accidents. It experienced the worst maritime pollution disaster in history just over a year ago, when the Amoco Cadiz tanker ran aground. Brittany's beaches, wildlife, and fishing industry were devastated by the ensuing oil spill. In 1967, Brittany was hit by the Torrey Canyon disaster, and in 1976, there were two other major oil spills on its coastline. Joan Shore for CBS News, Paris.
An oil slick from the Liberian tanker's own engine fuel is 6 miles long. By order of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, 8 reactors around the country are being shut down temporarily, pending safety improvements, designed to prevent another accident like the one at Three Mile Island, Pennsylvania, that occurred just a month ago today. The Three Mile Island reactor is now in a state of cold shutdown. Among the plants affected by the order is one in California, and we'll hear about it from Don Hamm of KCBS in San Francisco.
Utility companies say the closure of the 1,000-megawatt Rancho Seco nuclear power plant in Northern California could lead to scattered electrical outages this summer and higher bills for customers. But the situation may be eased somewhat by power purchases from out of state. Pacific Gas and Electric Company, which buys 40% of the output generated by Rancho Seco, reported it will gain 600,000 kilowatts of power on May 1st, just 3 days after Seco goes offline. If the shutdown lasts longer than the anticipated 30 days, PG&E says the power supplies could become very tight during the peak load months of July and August. It all depends on how hot the summer gets in the Central Valley of California and if breakdowns occur in other generating plants that will cut into power reserves. When Seco goes offline, power reserves for May will be cut to 9%. Utility companies feel a safe reserve is 15%. The utility company is asking customers to avoid the use of electrical appliances during the peak use hours of noon to 6 p.m. Don Hamm for CBS News, San Francisco.
Several thousand anti-nuclear protesters are planning a demonstration today at the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant near Golden, Colorado. They're demanding the shutdown of that government facility, which produces plutonium triggers for nuclear weapons. They contend that the Three Mile Island accident showed the need for the closing of such plants. Today's demonstration comes on the eve of the first anniversary of a rally held at Rocky Flats, and spokeswoman Catherine Harrington says it will be followed by acts of civil disobedience beginning tomorrow. 28 people were arrested at last year's rally, among them former Pentagon analyst Daniel Ellsberg. Ellsberg is expected to be back at Rocky Flats this weekend. After days of rising floodwaters, the worst may be over along the Red River between Minnesota and North Dakota. Ellen Wojon of CBS radio affiliate KFGO in Fargo reports the situation as it looks this morning.
There's almost a relaxed atmosphere in the neighboring cities of Grand Forks, North Dakota, and East Grand Forks, Minnesota. The swollen Red River is gradually receding. But it's been 82 years since the water's been this high, and it looks like it will continue lapping at dikes for another week. East Grand Forks city engineer Gary Sanders says this is no time to claim a victory.
More flood fights are lost as the water goes down than have ever been lost when the water's going up. There's many things that can happen. It really isn't over until you get down below 40 feet. And until we get there, everybody's got to stay awake.
Sanders thinks the dikes will hold unless wind and rain predicted for today combine to put more pressure on the sandbags. The two border towns have won every battle with the Red River since 1951. That's the last time water flowed down city streets. As one dike walker put it, let's just hope we haven't pushed our luck too far. Ellen Wojon for CBS News in Fargo, North Dakota.
The National Weather Service warns that the Red might rise again slightly because of new rainfall on its 5,600-square-mile watershed. And flood conditions across the border in Manitoba are likely to get worse in the next few days as the crest of the Red rolls northward. President Carter's anti-inflation program has racked up a badly needed victory, its biggest thus far. Sears Roebuck, the nation's largest retailer, has agreed to a rollback of some price increases. Mr. Carter played a personal role in this with a telephone call to a Sears vice president. This is the final weekend of Britain's nationwide parliamentary election campaign. Voters go to the polls next Thursday. Bob McNamara reports the way it looks in the home stretch.
The tension is growing in Margaret Thatcher's campaign now, tension fed by doubt that she can lead her Conservative Party into power. The problem haunting Thatcher and the Conservatives is the fact that Prime Minister James Callaghan and his Labour Party campaigners are narrowing the gap in the polls and closing in fast. Some polling organization accounts say Mrs. Thatcher's Conservatives have blown as much as a 20-point lead during the last week and a half. Most polls seem to agree that Prime Minister Callaghan and Labour trail now by little more than 3 points. Furthermore, in personal popularity, Callaghan has always been leading Mrs. Thatcher, and as the election draws nearer, Callaghan's popularity continues to go up. The fact that Mrs. Thatcher is seeking to become Britain and Europe's first woman Prime Minister is an issue, but it's one that her opponents do not discuss publicly for fear of creating a backlash. London casinos and gambling houses still rate the Conservatives the favorites, but the odds are getting slimmer. Still, Mrs. Thatcher is given a good chance of becoming Prime Minister based on the belief that in the end, the Conservatives may win enough parliamentary seats to cobble together a coalition with one or two minor parties in order to rule. Bob McNamara, CBS News, London.
A problem developed in Rhodesia today for Bishop Abel Muzorewa and his United African National Council. That party won a majority of seats in Parliament in the black majority rule election, and Muzorewa is scheduled to become the country's first black prime minister next month, succeeding Ian Smith. But this morning, the Reverend Indabaningi Sithole, whose Zimbabwe National Union Party ran a poor second, said that his party will not take the 12 parliamentary seats it won in the balloting. Sithole still charges widespread election irregularities, and he says that unless his charges are investigated by some independent group, there could be widespread killing in Rhodesia. In effect, he is boycotting the new government.